Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. This episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored by Audible.com. If you'd like to download a free audiobook, just go to audibletrial.com/teacherluke or click one of the buttons on my website that says Audible. Okay, let's get started with another episode. Here we go. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to an episode of Luke's English Podcast. This one features a conversation with my friend Paul Taylor, who you already know from previous episodes of Luke's English Podcast. Paul is back from the Edinburgh Fringe, where he was performing for the whole of August in a comedy show. And a couple of days ago, he came over to the flat for a cup of tea and a bit of a chat. We started talking about the Edinburgh Fringe and how it went for him. It was his first time, and I think he found it very challenging, because the audiences were hard to please. Apparently they had some tough shows where nobody laughed. And he realised that the standard of stand-up comedy in the UK is much higher than he expected. But it was a learning experience. Then we ended up talking about the similarity between learning how to do stand-up comedy and learning a language. And during the conversation, I quickly decided to record our thoughts on the podcast so that I could turn it into an episode. We wrote down a few brief ideas and then went upstairs to start recording. And you can now listen to that conversation here in full in this episode. The conversation is a little bit rambling, but I think that's a good thing. So it's a slightly disorganized chat because we didn't fully plan everything in advance, but that for me is a strength because it means that you can listen to some authentic English conversation, meaning that it's natural, it's not scripted. This is English conversation as it happens in the real world. We're not acting out a dialogue, and this is exactly the sort of conversation that you should try to follow because ultimately it's better for your English. It might be harder to hear and understand everything we say, but that's not a bad thing. It's good to get used to following a conversation in which you don't understand or hear every single word, okay? So during our slightly rambling conversation, we do come to some very good conclusions about language learning, which are written below on the page for this episode. So pay attention to the conversation because I think it does contain some really good advice. As ever, please add your thoughts to our conversation by leaving a comment below. What do you think about our conclusions for language learning? And can you add any ideas of your own? Also, listen carefully in this episode because I will share some of my experiences of learning French, which is something people have been asking me about recently. And you'll see that I'm a little bit shy about this subject, but I'll let you listen to the episode in order to find out why. In this episode, Paul and I ask you to send me some recordings of you copying the way that I speak. We talk about ways of improving your English and improving your pronunciation, one of those being that you can perhaps just try to sort of copy the way native English speakers speak. You might want to choose one particular person and just try and copy their speech patterns and just adding pushing your pronunciation by trying to do a sort of impression of an English accent at the beginning can be a good way to work on your accent. So we suggest that you actually try copying me because if you are a long-term listener to this podcast, then you probably hear my voice a lot. So I could be a good model for you to copy. So we ask you in this episode to send me recordings of you copying the way that I speak. 30 seconds up to a minute of time copying the way that I speak. What I ask you to do is record your introduction to an episode of the podcast. So please send me about 30 seconds to 1 minute of audio of you doing an impression of me, okay? And you can download my jingle from the webpage. There's a link where you can actually download the jingle. So you can, if you want, you can even copy the way that I introduce my podcasts. So you can download the jingle, play the jingle, and say, "You're listening to Luke's English Podcast." For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. So you could try and copy that, or you can even talk for 30 seconds at the beginning. And you know, I usually say things like, "Hello, welcome back to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. How are you? I hope you're fine. I hope you're well." You know, that kind of thing. So send me an impression of me, okay? And you can send your impressions to podcastcomp@gmail.com. podcastcomp@gmail.com. This isn't a competition. It's just a chance to encourage you to copy me just for fun and also for your pronunciation. So I can't wait to hear you copy my voice and my typical introductions, okay? podcastcomp@gmail.com. Also, if you listen all the way to the end of this episode, you'll hear some fun extra content that I added at the end. So our conversation lasts about 1 hour, and then after that, you'll hear some fun extra stuff afterwards. If you would like to write a transcript for this episode using a Google document, then you can. You can just click a link. There's a link on the page for this episode that will take you to a Google document where you can start your transcription, and I invite you to do that. Take part in the transcript collaboration. Okay, so that's it for this introduction. I'll now let you listen to the conversation that I had with Paul Taylor just a couple of days ago here in my flat. All right, thanks for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by my friend Paul Taylor. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
How are you, mate?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm doing. It's good to be back. Good to be back in Paris.
Now, Paul has been away in Edinburgh for about a month. He's only just come back. He was away at the Edinburgh Fringe, weren't you, Paul?
That's the one, yeah. Edinburgh Fringe Festival or Edinburgh Festival Fringe.
What is that exactly? I have actually talked about the Edinburgh Fringe on the podcast before. People might be aware of it, but just give me a very quick summary of what the Edinburgh Festival Fringe is, please.
It's essentially a comedy festival. Amongst other things, they do art and dance and things like that. But primarily, the whole month of August in Edinburgh turns into a big festival where there's outdoor seating and bars and places to hang out. And almost every space in Edinburgh gets turned into a comedy venue. So they put seats in, microphones, and a stage, and it turns into a venue. So there's about 3,000 shows that happen there during the month, and most comedians go there to perform for the entire month and try and make people laugh for a month.
So you were part of a comedy show that was on in Edinburgh, and you performed for like the whole month, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we was that's not good English, but we were there. There's a comedy show in Paris called French Fried Comedy. We decided the organizer of that show decided to take it to Edinburgh and bring some people over from Paris as well as other guests. And I didn't have my own show there. I was part of this showcase that was over there. And yeah, I performed for the whole month except for one weekend where I had the weekend off down in London with my chérie.
Okay, that's your girlfriend.
That is.
French. So, Paul, how was it?
It was pretty tragic. It was
really?
Yeah, it didn't go very well.
It was awful.
It was pretty awful. It was pretty terrible, yeah. It was actually one of the worst experiences of my life performing.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was it wasn't fun. To perform, it wasn't fun, but it was fun to go and see other comedy shows that were very good and try and get some inspiration from them, but I wasn't happy with my performance or the show that I was a part of.
I'm actually, obviously it's bad that you had a bad time and that you found it to be so horrendous. But in a way, I like to hear about other people's bad experiences, Paul, with the emphasis on other people's.
Yeah. I think everyone has enjoyed everyone I've spoken to since I've been back, or my parents have enjoyed the fact that I've been struggling a lot. They enjoy, for some reason, my mum loves it. My mum loves every story that I tell where it's just been horrific or she's on the floor laughing.
We don't want to hear about how wonderful it all was, Paul.
Exactly.
We want to hear about how you struggled and how it was difficult and how you failed. And, you know, we want to hear all about those things, I think. Obviously, we love to hear about, great experiences and success and so on. We do. But I think most people also love a good story of, difficulty. They love to hear about other people's difficulties.
Well, you've never seen a film or anything exciting where it all goes well the whole entire time.
Yeah.
There's always a bit of something where it's all gone wrong.
We like stories of challenge and so on. So, okay, listeners, I've got Paul on the podcast today, and the plan is that he's going to tell us a little bit about exactly what went wrong in Edinburgh. So imagine he's got, what? How many dates was it? 30 dates?
Not quite. We started on the 8th and we finished on the 30th. So 8 minus 30 is 22. So 22 dates.
22 dates, 22 comedy shows. As part of the big Edinburgh Fringe. That's what he had to do with a bunch of other people. Some people were French, some people were American, some people mm-hmm. were British. And so it was a team of people putting on a comedy show. And it was awful, according to Paul.
It was terrible.
From Paul's point of view, it was horrible. But I think you said to me earlier on that you think it's probably a great learning experience.
I think so, yeah. I see it similar to learning a language in many different ways, and I think we'll talk about some of that. But yeah, it was just terrible. It was just a great realization that that I'm not funny, and we're not funny in Paris.
Really,
really, like compared to the UK, we.
I'm funny.
Well, you're kind of funny.
It's just kind of a joke. I'm going to do that every time I say something that's supposed to be funny, and then people will know that was supposed to be funny. So, for example, oh, we're not funny.
We'll work on being funny together. We've got a new show, and we'll work on being funny. But yeah, it was just a great realization that we are utter shit at trying to make people laugh compared to the people in the UK. The quality of comedy in the UK is actually really great. And I knew that, but I'd forgotten about it because I've been in this bubble in Paris for so long. And yeah, it was. I mean, it was awful just for many different reasons. We had a venue, so our show was at 3 p.m. Every in Edinburgh at the festival, the show start at 10 a.m. and go till 5 a.m. Basically. So you kind of don't get a choice of when you perform. You submit an application, and they give you a venue and they give you a time slot. We got given 3 p.m. at a venue which is a sports bar. And in the back of this sports bar, they have a nightclub area where I guess on the weekends, not during the festival, they have nightclubs. So it's a big, massive space, very industrial looking inside. It could seat about 150 people, and the chairs were metal. The sound system was like a nightclub sound system. So there was a lot of bass, a lot of woo, woo, woo.
So when you were talking, it was all bass?
Yeah, it was all
like this. It was really bassy like that.
That was exactly what it sounded like. And put that O across, that sounded all right in my ears. But when you have a sound system that's like that, it just wasn't conducive to comedy. So the first issue was the venue and the time that we had. But for me, they're all kind of excuses. I think anyone can, if you're good enough, you can turn a situation into what it is. You can talk about how awful the venue is and actually make people laugh. So I hate using the excuse that it's the audience's fault and that's why it didn't go so well. In my opinion, it's just that we weren't good enough with the space and the time and the audience to be able to. We're not at that level yet where we're able to take those and turn it around.
So you felt actually that, you know, as you said, all the other factors like the venue and the microphone and stuff like that and the time slot. But the main thing for you was that you felt that you have a lot of work to do in order to learn how to be funny, right? So it was a personal realization that, like, oh my God, I'm just not good enough at this yet not ready to sort of be professional at it and so on. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, what was good, I sent you a couple of texts during the festival saying it's going shit, it's horrible. And to cheer me up, you'd sent me a couple of comments from your listeners who were like, oh, Paul's very funny from some of the episodes. So that kind of made me go, maybe I've got something, but I still haven't I still haven't figured it out. I probably should have figured this out before quitting my job and now not having any money.
To be honest, it's hard to go up on stage at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon in front of about 12 slightly drunk Scottish people.
Yeah, well, actually,
and make them laugh. You know?
The funnest gig that I did while I was there, we hired a flyer girl, a girl that was helping us out. She was about 16 or 17, and she helped us out with flyering. So we paid her.
What's flyering?
Flyering is when you hand out little posters, I guess, of your show. If you go, I'm trying to think of where else people where people might have seen flyers, like in a bar or something. You'll see like a postcard sized thing, and it's basically your show. And before the show, we would go out on the streets of Edinburgh like every other person and hand out a flyer and say, please come to our show. It's comedy from Paris. It's a free show from Paris. Free comedy from Paris. Paris, why don't you come
to... What were people thinking when you said that it was a show from Paris? Were they thinking, oh, so it's all French people?
I don't know.
So
I wasn't
gonna be
in their minds.
Baguettes and pâté and stuff?
That was the selling point, because as soon as I said free comedy, because there's about... There's one street in Edinburgh called the Royal Mile, where basically everyone who has a show goes out there and hands out flyers to tourists. And it's a big, it's crazy, it's a really great atmosphere. But there's so many people saying free show, free comedy, comedy this, comedy that. I had to find something like a tagline, so I'd just say free comedy show from Paris. And as soon as the word Paris came out, people would go, oh, and they'd take a flyer.
Paris, quite like the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. And if they'd stop, I'd go, oh, this is just mainly cheesy jokes, to be honest.
cheesy jokes. Did you get that? Mainly cheesy jokes, because Paris is obviously famous for its cheese.
So, but that was also maybe one of the issues. Mm-hmm. We had a good concept for a show. The show was called French Fried, and it was comedians who live in Paris coming to Edinburgh to make people laugh. But as the show turned out, a lot of us actually didn't live in Paris. We had some guests from the US who were very funny. It was just a complete mixture of things of why it just didn't go very well.
Now, right, so this is not just Paul's chance of complaining about why he had a bad time in Edinburgh. This is not what this is about. What I would like to do in this episode is make a comparison between the process of learning how to do comedy and the process of learning a language, all right? Mm. So basically the idea is that learning comedy is like learning a language, and we're going to see some parallels between the learning of comedy and the learning of a language. Okay. Now, Paul, in terms of your language background, obviously you're from the UK and you speak British English, but you do speak other languages too, don't you? What tell me a little bit about the other languages that you speak.
Yeah, so I guess a quick introduction to my language abilities, I guess you would say. So I'm obviously English, but I spent about half my life living in a French-speaking country, so France and also Montreal. And so my French is pretty good. And I also spent some time living in Madrid, in Spain, and I studied languages at university. So I'd say I'm very fluent in French, and my Spanish is fluent enough to talk to people, but it's not that amazing.
Can you give us a little example of some French and maybe some Spanish?
French first. Bonjour, je m'appelle Paul. Je suis anglais, mais j'habite en France depuis 6 ans. Mais j'ai grandi en France quand j'étais tout petit aussi.
Okay. Hello, my name's Paul. And you said your age, and you said how long you've been.
I didn't say my age.
Didn't you?
No, I said, what did I? I don't even remember what I said now. My name's Paul.
J'habite à Paris.
I live in Paris.
And since
6 years ago. See, that's
since 6 years is obviously a bit of a translation error. So you can't say I live in Paris since 6 years. I've been living in Paris
for six years.
Okay.
But I also grew up in France.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay. But no,
my French.
French is really, really good. And the Spanish as well. Can you say the same thing in Spanish?
I'll try. Pues hola, me llamo Paul, soy inglés, pero vivo en Francia desde hace 6 años y por eso hablo francés y también estudié el español durante la universidad y viví en Madrid durante 2 años también.
Wow, right, listeners.
Pow. I hate showing off, but that sounded very showy.
It does sound really good, Paul, it does.
But I think it might help in terms of some of the similarities between my experience in learning those languages and trying this new comedy thing and trying to be funny.
So we're talking about learning how to do something, right? Learning how to do something.
Yeah.
Learning how to do something. So in this case, learning how to do comedy, but also the similarity between that and learning how to learn a language.
Yep.
I think you get the idea, listeners, right? Okay, so we just made a few notes before starting the recording, and I think we're just going to go through some of these sort of conclusions that we came to about the similarities between learning these two things. So one thing that I thought of at the beginning was it's not what you know, it's what you can do, right? It's not what you know, it's what you can do. So let's see. In terms of learning a language, I believe that to be good at English or any other language, you need to be able to do it. So you need to be actually use the language and do functional things, communicate, basically speak and achieve communicative achievements,
which I'm currently
failing to do, even in my first language. But it's about achieving communicative acts successfully, right?
Yeah. Achieving communicative acts.
Using language to do things. That's
it's
what
about
I'm
doing
about.
It rather yeah. than learning. So, I think you can learn. You can know the grammar, you can know the vocab, you can read as much as you want, and you can listen to as much TV and film as you want. But unless you can actually speak it yourself, or write it yourself, and actually do it and get in the situation...
And have successful communication.
Yeah, that's what language is. Language was created to be able to communicate with people. Mm. And I don't like people who are always like, oh, my language is changing. Like, the French complain a lot. There's a lot of anglicisms right. or English words in French and similar other things.
The English complain a lot about English changing because of American influence and
yeah,
stuff, too.
If you can communicate, that's all that matters. That's my opinion. So anyway, yeah, it's one thing to learn and know the theory of language, but to be able to actually practice it, you know, I've met a lot of French people who struggle speaking English, but they understand a lot. I think that's the general thing. Like, they're used to watching films, TV shows, reading whatever, but then when they come out and try and speak French. English. Sometimes they're like, oh, I'm not used to doing this. Like, I don't speak very often, so I understand better than I can speak. But I think that's a general... I think a lot of people understand a language more than they can speak it.
Yeah, I think probably, the receptive part of it is easier than the productive part. But I have experience of meeting learners of English who are very good at doing... exercises on paper. They can do all the grammar exercises on paper and all that stuff, and yet they're sort of frustrated, and that's because it's not all about being able to do exercises on paper. It's one thing knowing all the grammar, but it's really what you need to focus on is actually using English to do things. So that means don't just do grammar exercises and learn the grammar, but you've got to like push yourself to actually get out there and open your mouth and engage in conversations with people, and don't be shy, give it a try and all that kind of thing. So it's about doing things, it's not about knowing things.
Yeah.
And is that the same thing in comedy?
Yeah, I think so. For me, you can watch as much stand-up comedy as you want. And if we stick to stand-up comedy as the version, because there's obviously, the analogy maybe doesn't fit to people who are just comedy writers. But if you're wanting to do stand-up comedy, you can watch as much stand-up comedy from other people as possible. You can listen to it. You can maybe know the inside techniques of how to write a joke, and maybe you can write a great joke. Mm. But it's all about using it on a stage in front of people. Mm. And some people who I know who are great joke writers are maybe not necessarily as comfortable on stage, and therefore are not as funny as we think they are, even though they're actually pretty funny at writing stuff down.
Yeah.
The advantage of comedy, obviously, is that you can make a career in just writing comedy and not actually performing it. But if we're sticking to performing it, you need to be able to perform it and make people laugh, as well as know the theory of comedy and how jokes work.
Right, okay. Okay, then. Now, another point that you made was this one about surrounding yourself with better people.
Mm.
Tell me about how surrounding yourself with better people is important for comedy first.
Yeah, so I think it's similar to everything in life. You know, I went to Edinburgh. I went to Edinburgh thinking that I was not bad. I thought I was funny, and being in this bubble in Paris of comedy, I thought, yeah, I'm pretty good at this. I can make people laugh on a regular basis. I'm pretty good. And then I showed up in Edinburgh and realized that I wasn't funny at all for the audience that I was performing with. And so the one of my friends who came to watch the show, he said, what you need to do is surround yourself with people who are much better than you. You need to be the worst one there so that you can learn from what they're doing. You won't learn anything by being the best that's there, because if you're playing, it's the same with sport. If you're trying to be a tennis player and you're surrounding yourself, you're always playing against opponents who are not as good as you. You don't necessarily learn anything. You don't get any better. So you have to play with people that are better than you, and basically surround yourself with people who are better at you. So I think that's similar to language learning. And what I found is that, yeah, you can be the best in your class at learning English or French or Spanish. But until you then go to an English or French or Spanish speaking country, you realize that actually your level isn't that great. But you have to be in that scenario to learn from the native speakers all the time instead of just surrounding yourself with other non-native speakers. I know a lot of, you know, non-native English speakers that hang around with other non-native English speakers, and they all understand each other really well. But then as soon as they speak to a native English speaker or a native speaker speaks to them, then there's a bit more difficulty. Mm. So surrounding yourself with the top level for me was not realization. I kind of knew it, but it's a good reminder that being in Edinburgh, I was surrounded by the best people in the business in Edinburgh from all over the world who were extremely funny. And it was good being one of the unfunniest people there.
But what's interesting is that the experience that you went through in Edinburgh, surrounded by, not in your show, but like in other shows that you saw, surrounded by some of the funniest people in the world, the experience was tough. It was actually a bad experience for you.
It was
really horrible because you found that you were constantly coming up against resistance all the time, thinking you weren't funny and so on. Because you suddenly realised what the standard was, and it was much higher than you.
Yep.
So the point is that, again, in a language learning situation, you might, if you do spend time with native speakers, or if you do listen to things that are a little bit difficult to understand, or you read things that are difficult to understand, you might think, oh my God, I'm terrible, my English is bad, and I'm not confident anymore. But actually, it is in that moment of resistance and that moment of difficulty where your brain is learning. And you're experiencing a sort of cognitive dissonance, you know, confusion and so on. But that is your brain categorizing and working hard to fix things. And subconsciously, I'm sure that, for example, coming after, you haven't done a gig in France since you came back from Edinburgh, but I'm sure that you'll come back sort of trained and fit. It's like going to the gym. It's like a Rocky movie. Rocky, when he prepares for a fight, he does all these really tough exercises and it's really brutal and tough, and he runs up the steps and he's sweating and it's hard. But ultimately, when he gets into the boxing ring, he's prepared. And that's where the proof, you know, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah,
you know,
fixed expression, pow,
there you go. So my point is there, like, you should push yourself into difficult situations. You should be prepared to listen to things that are a bit tough, and if it's a little bit tricky, then that's all right. That's part of the learning process.
When I used to deliver training at Apple, one of the things we always used to say was, in order to learn, you need to be out of your comfort zone. You cannot learn anything by being in your comfort zone. So you need to jump out of that in order for it. And it's difficult. It is difficult, and it can be very demoralizing, which it was in Edinburgh. I just felt like I wanted to come home after the second day, and I just had to do it. And hopefully now, like when I look back on it now, it's a lot less difficult, or it seems like it wasn't as bad as it was. But in the moment, I hated it. And it reminds me of going back to what you were saying about coming back to Paris and doing another gig here. Maybe I'll be better. It reminds me of when I was learning Spanish at university. I was obviously in a class at university, and you know, everyone's level was okay, and that was great. And the first summer, I actually went to Spain with a friend of mine to try and get a job for the summer, to improve my Spanish. And I got a job at a supermarket on a beach, and I spoke Spanish for a month, basically nonstop. I didn't realize I was getting better, but then when I came back after that and I started university again for the second year, I realized how much better my Spanish was as a result of doing that. But I didn't realize in the moment that I was learning anything. And I think similar thing with Edinburgh. At the time, I didn't think I was really learning anything. I knew that potentially when I go back to Paris, I would learn something, and subconsciously things would have happened, but it's still yet to be
evident,
proven.
Yeah. Interesting though. So the point is, when you're really learning, it just feels difficult, but then later on, it pays off. Interesting. So what else? Throw yourself in at the deep end. There's a phrase, one of those fixed expressions that we've had on the podcast. Anyway, throw yourself in at the deep end. That's just basically, instead of like gradually taking... See, there are, the thing about learning languages is there are different theories. For example, just going back to that point about it feeling difficult, and there has to be a sense of it being difficult and so on. That's the best way to improve. There is another theory which sort of contradicts that, and that's the idea that, you know, people have to be in comfort and it has to be pleasant and they have to be feel like they're in a safe zone when they're learning English, because there's this thing called the affective filter, which is the idea that if you're stressed or if you feel uncomfortable and nervous, then you don't learn. But I think actually it's possible to be sort of comfortable and yet still finding it difficult, you know? So I suppose the two things are not mutually exclusive, you know, being sort of relaxed and yet finding it difficult. That's that's the key thing, I think, is that you're, you know, in a challenging situation, but you're not inhibited by it. You know what I mean? Like, you were on stage, I'm imagining you on stage with a difficult audience, and you're not inhibited, you're not unable to actually do anything. You're fluid, you're actually doing things, but you're not necessarily getting all the success that you want. Yeah. So you're still lucid, you're still thinking, and you're still able to put your thoughts together and produce sentences and all that sort of thing. But the difficulty is that the results are not coming. You see the difference?
Yeah, it's maybe being comfortable being uncomfortable.
Or just being comfortable with the challenge.
Yeah.
So
I think, yeah.
So throwing yourself in at the deep end is that idea of, instead of like tentatively dipping your toe in at the start and taking lots of time, you know, instead you just leap at the challenge in a confident way, and then you dive into the water and you have to struggle very hard, but you learn more quickly in those circumstances.
I agree.
Okay.
I think tons of people have said, oh, how have you learnt those languages? And it's by being either in those countries or in a relationship with somebody from those countries, or that you're constantly practicing that with people from those. You can't learn another language, you know, to like fluency level, in my opinion, by just sitting at home and like being on Rosetta Stone or any sort of learning. You have to practice it. You have to throw yourself in the deep end, go on a trip to whichever country it is that you're learning, or a country that speaks that language, and not surrounding yourself by other people. Like, you have to surround yourself by local people.
Okay.
Depends to what level you want to learn English.
What do you think about Luke's English podcast?
I think it's a great way, because you get to...
He's not just saying that. I think he actually believes that. Yeah, I hope so.
I think, you know, that's the thing. Like, I think my theory of why French people don't speak with a good accent...
Yeah. Well, not many French people are listening to this. By the way, everyone listening to this, if you are French, then leave a comment, because I never hear from French people, or rarely. I've got a couple of listeners, to be honest. I do have a couple.
They don't care.
But they don't care, really? I do have a couple of French people who regularly comment and stuff like that. But really, the vast majority of my listeners are not French. I mean, that's not just because there are more non-French people in the world than not, but you know what I mean. Like, I get plenty from Spain and neighboring countries, but for some reason France, they're not interested.
Yeah,
I don't
listening.
Podcasts aren't the big thing in France. They don't do podcasts really.
No one cares. Listening. So this podcast is great for the listening aspect, but you're not going to fully learn English by just listening to this podcast. Yeah. You have to go to England or America or somewhere, or be with Americans or English people or Australians or whoever, and speak with them. If you want to be fluent, again, it depends what your goal is. If your goal is to just learn enough to get by, then that's a different story. But if you want, the question I've had from people is, how have you managed to get fluent in other languages? And it's only by throwing myself in the deep end. And if I go to Spain, not surround myself with English people, which is very easy to do. Or if you move to another country, it's very easy to join the expat network in that country and then be, oh, we're part of the expat group. So you're surrounding yourself with non-native speakers of that language, when really what you should be doing is immersing yourself at the deep end. And it's difficult to start with, but it pays off. It always pays off.
I think a lot of the things that stop people from doing these things is... there's the sense of it being a risk, or that people are not confident enough. That's what I often hear. That I'm not confident enough.
Mm-hmm. It's like stand up. It's like stand up comedy.
Mm.
People, people who've been like, oh, I want to try it. The thing, they're not confident enough to maybe get on stage. But again, throwing yourself at the deep end and doing, you know, gigs that you that are going to push yourself. If somebody says, hey, would you like to do half an hour on stage and you've only ever done 5 minutes, then yeah, do it. Put yourself, make yourself uncomfortable, because you'll realize things that you won't have realized by just keep doing, you know, it's very similar.
To an extent, I think that you can kind of get confidence by just doing it. I mean, confidence is not necessarily some sort of magical essence that you have to find somewhere, but we've all got it in ourselves. You can just be confident if you just decide, right, well, to hell with being embarrassed, and I don't care if I fail. I'm just going to do it anyway because it's the best way. If you realize that just sort of throwing yourself into situations and forcing yourself, pushing yourself to do it, that's where confidence comes from, really. So it's not something that you can just take from someone or someone can give you. You have to just kind of make yourself do it.
Being English.
Yeah.
I think we have a lot of it. I
mean, don't you think so?
I am the most unconfident. I'm not the most unconfident person, but I am. There's certain things that annoy me about myself that I'm not confident enough to do.
But people, Paul, would look at you and say, "Well, clearly you are confident because, first of all, you're going up on stage, and that's a very brave thing to do." This is what many people say. People when they. If they see me do stand-up or if they find out that I do comedy, they go, oh, wow, you must be so brave to do that. I really admire your confidence. That's what they say when you're not funny.
Well, that's
they say, oh, God, you're so brave, aren't you, to go up on stage.
What's brave? Here's the difference, and I figured it out.
So, wait a minute. Sorry. But so people would say that you were confident. Also, you know, the fact that you've learnt languages and things, obviously, by throwing yourself in at the deep end. So people would say that you are confident. But why do you say that you feel you're not confident? Specifically, where are the areas that you feel unconfident?
It's usually related to potential situations where I might embarrass myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example, a full-on example of... So last year, I started making some YouTube videos called Taylor's Top Tips.
Yep.
And they were 15-second videos. I've stopped doing them for now, but I might bring them back, whatever. There's times... of those videos is one specific one that I can talk about, which was when I was in Spain. I wanted to do a Taylor's Top Tip on how to be the most hated person in Barcelona, basically. And the sketch was, the 15-second sketch was me wearing a Real Madrid t-shirt, which is a football team which isn't in Barcelona, and they had just beaten Barcelona. And the thing was me walking into like a busy thing, and
it's like a busy public square in Barcelona.
The biggest public square in Barcelona.
The biggest public square in Barcelona.
And shouting, ole, 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 Madrid. And just like, but here's the thing, I didn't do that. I went out and I whispered it.
Really?
And then I dubbed it over because I couldn't bring myself to make myself look like an idiot.
No, that's probably quite a good idea, Paul, because you may have been assaulted.
Potentially, but there's a couple of those videos where I haven't done the thing in public like I should have. And that's, I lack a lot of confidence in real life. What I figured out is when people have said to me, yeah, but you're really confident, you go on stage, or you're not shy, you know, you go on stage, and your previous job, you used to stand in front of hundreds of people and deliver presentations.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've figured out the difference is when it's the expected thing for me to get on a stage and make people laugh, I'm fine with that. It's when it's not an expected thing. So at house party, it's not expected for me to be the funniest person or for me to get up and you know, deliver a monologue or something. And at house parties, I can't. I'm very unsociable and I'm very shy. I think the same thing with language is, if you're in a group of native English speakers and they're all speaking and they're all talking amongst themselves, and you're the only non-native English speaker, you don't want to speak. You just want to listen. You just want to listen.
Right.
And I would do that for Spanish and French. And
yeah, I do that all the time.
And I just didn't speak. And it was only when it was forced on me to speak, like when I started working in France and I had to speak to French customers, that I actually did that. And so I think, you know, confidence has many aspects, and I'd consider myself not very confident in a lot of aspects.
But in those situations, Paul, where you feel unconfident, what is it that is, you know,
what's holding me back?
What's the thing that? And what I'm saying is, where does confidence come from? So you don't feel confident in some situations, and yet Don't you do it anyway?
No.
No?
No, there's some, again, if it's the expected result, if people are on a state, if somebody,
I know what you're saying. Yeah, because I do the same thing. Like, I will, if I'm in a gathering of people, if it's a comedy gig and I've got 5 minutes on stage, then I will go up there and I'll be myself. And mm-hmm. because I've got, it's I'm expected to be trying to make people laugh.
Yep.
And all of that humor is part of the, I'm very inarticulate today.
But like, so the videos, I'll do my videos as an example.
Yeah.
Because I was on my own and I had my GoPro camera and it was me on my own. I couldn't bring myself to make an idiot of myself out in the street. Mm. Even though it had been lasted 15 seconds and no one cares afterwards, no one will see me. There's something in me that stops me doing that. However, if I'd have been with a film crew with a big camera and a big boom microphone, I'd have been absolutely fine doing it because people see the cameras and they go, they're expect, okay, he's doing something, he's not just a crazy person. So I think for me, the lack of confidence comes from me not wanting to be judged by other people in a negative way in public. Again, on stage, it's expected I get on stage and if I make a fool of myself, but even on stage, I'm comfortable talking on stage to people, but I'm not comfortable enough yet to make an idiot of myself on stage by doing crazy accents or crazy.
Yeah.
And some of my comedy, it detracts from a lot of the things that I'm talking about because sometimes I have to be in performance mode and I have to do that, but I just can't do it. I don't know. It's just, it's
the, you know, I think we know now that people's biggest fear is to be judged publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Like public speaking is often the thing that people put on their biggest list of fears. It comes, in some cases, it comes before death. People are more scared of being judged in public than they are of their, you know, of death even.
Mm.
It's, you know, it commonly comes at the top of those kinds of surveys. It's, I guess the point is it's very normal to feel unconfident in those sorts of situations where you risk making a fool of yourself. Everyone feels like that. Absolutely everyone in the world. It's the most human thing in the world to feel like that. And what happens is that you get more results and you get more returns on risks when you know that and you do it anyway.
Mm.
Like,
so something that's helped me is sometimes almost becoming a different person. Like you play a character in your head. You go, okay, cool, I have to speak Spanish now amongst these Spanish people because otherwise it's not going to be useful for me. And then I kind of become a different person. And I've heard that from people when I speak a different language, that they think that I'm a different person, or not that they think, I'm the same person obviously, but it's a kind of part of my character that's different. And I think comedy is very similar to that in the sense that when you go on stage for stand-up comedy, usually you're yourself, but you're an exaggerated version or an exaggerated part of yourself for the audience than you are off stage. And I think when you speak your native language, you're a slightly different person than when you speak a second language.
I think that is something that scares people sometimes.
Mm.
I've found that to be a bit weird and a bit scary, that I find that when I speak French, now I'm an example, to be honest, Paul, of like a bad language learner. And I'm ashamed. I'm very ashamed to admit it, but it's true. And I'm one of these
you've
people.
Been in 2 years?
Because I know that, for example, it's not what you know, it's what you can do.
Mm.
And I'm an example of that because I know a hell of a lot about the right way to learn a language. I know what we call metacognitive strategies for language learning. I know because I'm a professional teacher of English. I'm someone who's got lots of ideas on how to learn a language. I know all of these things.
But you don't
but
do
I
it
don't
yourself.
Do it.
And you don't practice what you preach.
Like I've said in my comedy before that my French is not very good. My French is quite poor, but my excuses are improving all the time. Yeah, that was a joke. So my excuses are excellent. I'm fluent in excuses. But my French is still pretty basic. So you know, but all of these things apply to me too.
You've got to do it. You've got to listen to Pierre's French podcast. He'll have some good teaching. And but that, no, it's interesting because I think
there is no such thing as Pierre's French podcast. Unfortunately, there's a few French podcasts, but I still haven't really found one that really does it for me.
Really does it for you. I tell you what is interesting. I felt exactly the same because I was one of those people up until 6 months ago that would tell people, follow your dreams, life's too short, stop doing this job that you don't like, specifically to my girlfriend. Like, she doesn't like the job that she doesn't like being in law, but she was forced to do it.
She's a lawyer.
Yeah, she was forced to do it at the age of 17 because you have to make a choice in France, and so she did that, but she doesn't necessarily like it. But I'd always be like, well, do something else. You love animals, you love this, get out of it, do something. Life's too short, we're all going to die, it's going to be crazy. And I was the first person that didn't follow that, because I was in my regular job at Apple for such a long time that was when I switched. I was like, all right, I've actually got to start. And all my friends back in the UK, I'd sent them all these postcards with this like manifesto that was like, live your life, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Motivational stuff. And I wasn't doing it myself. So I did it.
So you decided to start to practice what you preach.
Exactly.
That's what you're doing.
So,
I need to do the same thing, Paul. I think that I hope that my listeners are following everything we're saying, that this is a little bit of a rambling conversation. Mm. I mean, we are making we do have some conclusions to share. If we just summarize, you know, it's not what you know, it's what you can do. So it's about the actual practice of doing it in terms of learning a language and doing comedy. For example, you can no vote. Yeah. surround yourself with better people. Like, you know, try to be with native speakers of the language you're trying to learn. It might be difficult, but that's going to be good for you. Similarly, with comedy, surround yourself with people who are funnier than you and you will raise your game. Throw yourself in at the deep end. We've talked about that. Accept that you're going to be a slightly different person. That's what we were talking about.
Mm.
I find that when I speak French, I find it weird that I'm not myself. I feel like I'm a different person. I'm not sure I'm ready to be that different person. It's like a really weird sort of personal thing that when I start speaking French, then I have to sort of, I don't know, I just feel like I'm going away from who I am. But you have to own that.
Schizophrenic.
Well, something. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's a weird thing. But my point is that you have to own that other person. Do you know what I mean? That sounds so weird, but
you have to accept that you're going to be a different person in a different language, and then once you do that, then you start learning a lot quicker, and everything becomes amazing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So even if you feel different when you're speaking English, it's still you. It's just a different aspect of you.
You'll start drinking tea. You'll start doing things that English people do, and you'll be like, "Why am I doing this? I don't usually put milk in my tea, but now I am."
You'll become more sarcastic.
You'll apologize a lot more.
You'll apologize for no reason.
Sorry, do you have the time? Why are you apologizing at me? Because you're asking me the time.
Well, because you've just interrupted me.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, no, I don't have the time. Why are you apologizing again?
the thing that I'm amused by is when I step on your foot on the metro and you apologize to me. So, oh, sorry that you stepped on my foot. Sorry that my foot was there.
Yeah, sorry that I interrupted your... Yeah, exactly.
That's my joke.
It's just
sorry for interrupting your foot. Didn't realise that you'd booked this area of the floor and that I was camped on it. Anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry for interrupting your foot.
So, learn from failure. That's a big one.
Oh, mate.
Learn from failure.
It's a whole podcast on its own.
It is, isn't it? I'm learning a lot from this episode. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to stop doing that noise, all right? That's really annoying. I've stopped doing it now. I'm learning from failure. Mm. Anyway, don't be afraid to fail. Yeah, because it's the failures that you learn from. Like, for example, in comedy, I find that as a basic rule, as a bit of wisdom, if you go out and you do a really good show and the whole room laughs and it's amazing, you did a really great show and you were really funny, you don't learn from that experience. In fact, that can be quite bad for you, because if you get that every time, then you don't push yourself and then you don't improve. You just go all soft because the audience just laugh at everything you do. So what you do is you enjoy those days, you enjoy those gigs where the audience laughs at everything you say, and then when you go out and you make jokes, the same jokes that made everyone laugh the night before, and they don't make anyone laugh, those are the gigs that you learn from. So you enjoy the good gigs and you learn from the bad gigs. And in terms of language, well, it's obvious, isn't it? learning from your mistakes?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to allow yourself to make mistakes. When I was learning languages to start with, I, again, didn't participate in conversations between native speakers in Spanish and French because I didn't want to make a mistake in the grammar or the vocabulary. I understood everything that was happening, but I just wouldn't talk because I was scared of making a mistake. And the thing that happens in language learning is we shouldn't care. Because no one else cares. Everyone knows. Everyone's just so impressed that you're even speaking a second language. Yeah. But that's what you need to let go of. It's really difficult to let go of it because it's the same in comedy. Like once you get, you know, I've been talking about the same stuff I've been talking about for about 2 years now, and it's getting better each time. But I found it very difficult to just get on stage with new stuff, all brand new stuff, and fall on my face. And I think I should do that. Because you learn a lot more from your failures, as you say, and that's what you do. The difficult thing with comedy and language is sometimes you don't know that you failed. So you might contribute to a conversation amongst native speakers, and you might make a couple of mistakes in terms of grammar and vocabulary, but naturally those speakers, the native speakers, won't correct you straight away because they're worried that if they correct you, then it's being insulting. So you kind of have to ask the people around you to say, hey, I'm learning English, please correct me every time I'm making a mistake. Because naturally they won't correct you. They'll just find it cute that you're making little mistakes and it will just be part of the way you speak. And there's people that I know that have been, example, in France for 35 years and they still make mistakes, but because no one's told them that they've made the mistake, they're still doing it. And then when I finally said, hey, you know that you actually say it like that, they go, really? No one's told me that for 30 years. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So from the language learner's point of view, you've got to try and ask for or look for corrections and don't assume that everything's fine because you may be making mistakes that you're not aware of. Yeah. So you've got to be prepared to you know, be corrected and try and invite corrections. Although it's a bit weird if you're with native speakers. You see, like, I think that if there's a bunch of English people in the pub or something and they're hanging out with their friend who is also learning a language, it's going to be weird if that person says, oh, can you correct all my errors? That people don't necessarily want to correct you all the time. So it's a bit tricky that.
Yeah, you kind of have to find the right balance.
But the thing is not to get complacent. Don't assume that everything is perfect. You've got to always be ready to learn and don't take it too badly if you realize that you've made a mistake. Okay. Cheat and cut corners is a note that I wrote here. Cheat and cut corners. Can you really cheat? Is that okay? And what do we mean by that?
Yeah, I think life is a game and you've got to cheat your way through it, basically. If you follow the rules too much, like the English do, or the Germans, then I don't know what I'm talking about. No, you can cheat by... what I was referring to was when I was learning languages, I cheated a little bit, and I still do, with the accent. When you're learning a language, the accent, I've talked about it, I think, on a previous podcast episode, that if you speak with an accent that is pretty good, people will automatically think you speak that language better than somebody who speaks it with a very strong foreign accent.
Right.
So, you know, as an example, you know, my Spanish and my French accents are pretty good. In terms of being but I don't speak the best Spanish of the people that there's a friend of mine who speaks much better Spanish than I do, grammatically, his vocab and everything, but he has a very strong English accent. He's like, hola, como estás, todo bien,
right?
And Spanish people think that I speak better Spanish than he does, when in reality, on paper, grammatically, he speaks much better Spanish than I do, but I'm cheating because of the accent.
So you're saying that improve your accent as a kind of shortcut to getting good English. So if your accent is good, people are just immediately going to assume that your level of English is good, and therefore their estimation of you will be a bit higher. So okay,
it made me laugh because I don't follow football at all, but there's a football team in the UK called Arsenal, and the coach is called Arsene Wenger. Well, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Arsene Wenger,
and he's French. And he's been in the UK at least, 25, 30 years? I don't know how long he's been a manager of Arsenal, but it's a long time.
Yeah.
but he speaks very much like this all the time. My players on the field, they pass the ball very well. Like, mate, how long have you lived in England and your accent is still that
but
terrible?
You know, some people find it very hard to drop their accent. You know, it's like really difficult. One of the most difficult things for many people to do.
Yeah.
Tell me about your girlfriend again, because you had a story about her accent.
Yeah, she's
French.
She's French, and she speaks French, speaks English with a better accent than the one I just imitated. But when I imitate her on stage, I imitate her like, "Hello, my name is Adeline. I am from France."
You exaggerate her.
Exaggerate, because that's comedy. You've got to exaggerate everything for comedy.
Yeah.
But anyway, she speaks with a better accent than that. But it's still, you can still tell it's a very pronounced French accent.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always said to me, "Oh, you know, I wish I could speak like you. I wish I could speak with a British accent because I think it's very sexy, blah, blah, blah. I like it." All that
kind
of stuff.
She's right, of course.
Obviously. So I said to her, "You can," because she's imitated me. Sometimes when she's making fun of me to her friends and she's imitating me, she'd be like, "Oh, hello, my name is Paul. I'm from England." I'm like, there you go. You sound more English than you just did. And so she almost, I feel like she has to almost make fun, or she's like, "Yeah, but I feel weird because it feels like I'm mocking the accent." I'm like, "Yeah, but when you're mocking it, you sound better than you do when you're in your normal accent." So I think one of the ways potentially to get better at an English accent or an American accent is to imitate, you know, TV personalities. If you want, just here's what I think, listeners, you should do. I think you should send in to Luke a 10-second clip of you imitating Luke on his podcast. And we'll figure out who the best imitator and the best English accent is, because I think that's a good way of doing it, is imitating the people that you listen to in order to get a better accent. So
I'd actually really like to hear that.
Yeah, you should do that.
And you can do that, everyone. Let's see.
How do they send it in?
What they should do is, so I still have an email address which I used for a competition on the podcast last year, and that email address is podcastcomp@gmail.com. so podcastcomp, so podcastcomp@gmail.com. now, this is not a competition, but
everything is a competition,
really.
So the winner will get something, the winner will get their thing played on the podcast.
I think I'd like to play all of them.
That should be a podcast on its own.
I think
it's just
it would
people
be hilarious.
Trying. Everyone, please imitate Luke doing his introduction, because he normally has pretty good introductions to his podcast. So I think you should send in an introduction and pretending that you're Luke. So episode whatever it is, like, you know, you've got to do. Should I start off? Should I?
Yeah,
do,
go ahead. Go ahead.
I'll do the first. I'll do the first imitation.
No, wait a minute. I need to just before we do that.
I need to get in the Luke Thompson moment. Hello, my name.
let me just sort you out with the jingle as well, because you're going to need the.
I can't.
You're going to need the jingle too, so just put that in there too. You ready?
Yeah.
Ready, Paul?
I'll try. Yeah.
All right, hold on. So I'm just going to duck it in. Okay, here we go. See.
Sorry, I thought that I was waiting for. Okay.
Oh no.
I see what you mean. Yeah. All right.
You can just talk over the top of this jingle and then do an introduction.
What's your normal introduction for that?
The normal one is this. You're listening to Luke's English podcast. Do you want that?
I'm good. So this is, everyone has to imitate that one phrase, the beginning jingle.
You're listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Okay.
Okay. So what do you want? You just want the empty jingle.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. All right.
What's the first?
What?
Okay.
You're listening to Luke's English.
You're listening to Luke's English. Okay.
For more information. Okay, here we go.
You're listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, go to teacherluke.co.uk.
And then you have to start an episode.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Luke's English podcast. Today on.
They have to ask everyone how they are.
Oh, yeah.
How are you? I hope you're fine.
Obviously,
I've got no idea if you are fine.
How are you? I know you can't answer that question. Hello, how are you? I know you can't answer that question because you're not really here. Is anyone here? Is the Earth here? I don't know. That's my attempt at imitating.
But then you have to try and string that out for about 1 hour and 20 minutes. It's 1 hour and 20 minutes of nonsense while everyone listening to it thinks, what am I actually listening? I thought this was a podcast for people learning English, and it's now like a weird load of philosophical rambling.
Can't wait for some people from Spain to be like, hello, my name is Luke Thompson. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, come on. Not if they're regular listeners.
No, if they're regular listeners, they'll all sound like you.
But, yeah.
So all of this is to say that in order to get a good accent, you can imitate the people that you like listening to.
That's
so
that's the point.
Send your 30-second audio clip to podcastcomp@gmail.com.
And what we want you to do is just do like a few seconds of, maybe 1 minute of like introduction to the beginning of an episode of Luke's English Podcast. And you have to copy me, okay? So you imagine you have this first. And this is where you say hello and welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Luke's English Podcast.
Okay, and then this is where you go, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Luke's English Podcast.
Can you make
How
that,
are you?
Can you make that jingle available off your website? Can they download that jingle?
Yeah, I will. I'll make the jingle available.
So that they can record over the jingle.
Go to the page for this episode. You'll be able to download that jingle as an MP3. If you've got an Apple Macintosh computer, you've already got that jingle in there. Just do search for jingles and you'll find it. It's a GarageBand jingle, royalty-free. So the greater point here is that if you want to improve your accent, you can actually sort of, you can just choose to copy it. But you see, the thing is, you do have to be prepared to be yourself. So you can put on a bit of performance, you can act, you can fake an accent a bit, but at the same time, remember to be yourself.
Mm.
Don't fake it too much because people will sense it and they'll find it unattractive. You know, people don't like that kind of fake stuff. But nevertheless, I think it's possible to consciously push your accent a bit by trying to copy the accent a little bit, as long as it doesn't get too fake. Do you know any examples of people who are maybe faking it a bit?
Yeah, there's a couple of people.
Don't name any names.
I won't any names, but Luke Thompson, he pretends to be English. He's not actually. Luke's actually Swedish, and he's pretending to teach you English with this great
thing
English
is that doesn't
BBC
work because the Swedes have all got really good English.
It's true.
So I could be Swedish, and I look a little bit Swedish
you
as well.
You could be.
I'm actually Japanese.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's good.
Shall I do a Japanese impression? That could be really racist, couldn't it?
Well, it could be, but
there's certain accents that if
we should do the rest of the podcast, you being Japanese and I'll be Spanish.
You are listening to Luke's English Podcast, and how are you? No, that was I used to be able to do a Japanese accent much better than I can now.
Yeah, well,
I am very happy. No, fucking, I don't know what
yes,
to.
Of course, we are very happy to be here in Lou's apartment, overlooking the Eiffel Tower. It's very good. It's a very cloudy day. But I think Paris is very cloudy most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
In
French?
In France, in the south of France, the clouds are less. But in the north, it is more like England. You take our weather and we add 5 degrees Celsius to the weather you have in London.
Okay, so Russian?
Yes, in Russia, I don't know the weather very well. I have information about the culture, the alcohol, but not the weather.
Yeah, because
very snowy. It snows a lot.
That's the stereotype, I would imagine.
Yes,
I think it's probably nice and sunny in some places.
Yeah, maybe yes. Sunny when vodka.
Australia.
Fucking weather in Australia, mate.
Oh, mate. It's bloody perfect.
It's too easy, mate. The weather in Australia. If you got Australia,
Australia.
If you got Australia, basically, got to hang out at the beach. The beach is fantastic. Go. So once I went surfing in Australia.
Yeah.
In the winter. On the 4th of July.
Surfing in the winter? Fourth of July?
Yeah.
But that's an American day.
I know. I went with an American surfing for the first time. They gave us some pink surfboards.
What happened to your accent, mate?
Don't know, mate.
Can you do the difference between an Australian and a New Zealand accent?
I can tell the difference when they speak, but I can't really do. I can South African. I'm not too bad. I can do a bit of the South African accent, but I can't do the Kiwi. The Kiwi, they just eat the vowels.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I spoke for long enough, I probably could get a bit of a Kiwi accent. But it's they'll say pun
and jump.
Have you got a pun?
Fush and chups.
Have you got a pun? I need a pun to write something down.
It's still sounding South African.
It's not very good.
Okay, so let's wrap this up, Paul. We have just invited listeners to send in their impressions of me. So that's about a minute. You can send it to podcastcomp@gmail.com. Just a minute of you pretending to be me. Okay, just to give me an impression of me. And we've just gone through lots of things, all right? So just to sum up some of those things, you've got to try to be confident if you can. Try and push yourself to be confident. That can be difficult, but it's a question of not being worried about failing. And remember that everyone's worried about failing, and it's a perfectly human thing to do. You can try and push it. You can act a little bit, put on a bit of a performance. That might mean doing an impression of an accent, but remember to be yourself. Cheat and cut corners. So, you know, for example, use an accent to make yourself sound better, even if you don't have perfectly accurate English. Don't take it too personally. You know, be ready to take criticism. In fact, you may need to look for criticism to push yourself. And learn from failure. Don't be afraid to fail. Accept that you might be a slightly different person in another language, and that's fine. Throw yourself in at the deep end. Surround yourself with better people. It's not what you know, it's what you can do. And that's a selection of things that we've learned.
Yeah, just do it. Just do it. If you want to learn English, it's not easy. It takes a long time to learn a different language. Similar to comedy, it takes a long time to get actually funny on stage. Just keep pulling through. And when it's demotivating, try and find something that will remotivate you. Like Luke's English podcast. I think any podcast, that was interesting.
What's a podcast?
I don't know. A podcast is when it's the police version of Luke's English podcast. Yeah. Doesn't matter. A plod in English, British, yes. is whatever. Yeah.
Sometimes it's a nickname for
you. Just need to stay motivated and keep trying. Keep pulling through, because that's the most important thing. And one day you'll get there, and one day you'll be really proud of all the work that you've done.
And in the end, you know, if you've had a bad day, if you feel like, you know, your English isn't improving, just listen to Luke's English podcast. We're here to make you feel better. That's the idea anyway, isn't it? Thanks very much for listening to another episode. And don't forget to visit the page for this one, where you'll find, for example, that jingle that you can download if you want to. But that is basically it for this one. Thanks very much for joining me, Paul.
Merci beaucoup. À la prochaine. See you soon.
Yep, indeed. All right, thanks, ladies and gentlemen. Speak to you again soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everyone. This is Luke speaking, and this is just an extra bit of content at the end of this one. I just wanted to say nice one for listening all the way to the end of the episode. Well done. You're a super extra, super duper brilliant, special ninja listener from space. Good for you. That's a good thing, by the way, if you were wondering. I consider that to be a plus point. So well done for listening all the way to the end of this episode. And as a way of sort of rewarding you, and I hope that you do consider it to be a reward, I'm going to now play you some more outtakes. I've played you some outtakes before, I believe, so it's basically the same thing. Sometimes recording episodes of the podcast is a bit complicated for me, I'd like to share those moments with you. So here are a few more outtakes from this episode. So I know it sounds like I just pressed the record button and the whole thing came out easily. Well, in fact, often what happens is I start recording and I'm not happy. And if I'm not happy in the first minute, then I have to start again. And so that can mean that I have lots of sort of mistakes and rejected portions of episodes on my memory card. So I'm now going to play some of those to you because they're quite enjoyable, really. There's even one bit in this episode. I spoke to Paul for about 10 minutes, but I just felt like we were rambling and I wanted this episode to really get down to the point. I rejected 10 minutes and we talked for 10 minutes and I rejected that. And then another one, we talked for about 5 minutes and I rejected that. So you're going to get something in the region of about 20 minutes of outtakes, I think, now. So I thought they were worth playing to you. I hope you enjoy them. All right, thanks for listening. Here are your outtakes from this episode. Wait a minute. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Oh, fuck. Hello, everyone. Luke's English podcast is free, but you can support... No. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of this award-winning podcast. No. Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. It's time for another episode of the podcast, and you'll be glad to know, I hope, that Paul Taylor is in the room with me.
Hi, everyone.
How are you, Paul?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad to be back. You've got a message. Everything's good. Something binged.
Something went bing. Did you hear that, everyone?
Bing, bing. They might not have heard it.
They might not have heard it.
Probably not.
Well, now they can't.
Well, it's like the other day when you were doing a podcast about, oh, you might hear my coffee machine in the background. Didn't hear it.
No.
I was disappointed. I was looking forward to hearing brrrr, but nothing.
Because
I ran away too quickly.
See, what's happened is that... recently, I've been using much better quality equipment to record the podcast.
So you don't need to run away.
Years ago, what would have happened is any tiny little noise in the flat kind of was suddenly much more obvious. So that's when I was using other types of microphone. But nowadays, I use microphones that you don't pick up on all those extra noises. So that constantly happens. I say, oh, you can probably hear my washing machine, or you can hear the rain in the background, or you can hear my mobile phone making noises. And I listen back to the podcast and you can't hear anything.
We probably won't be able to hear the bing, but the phone did go bing, bing. And the reason you've got good quality microphones is because people have donated money to your podcast.
Yes,
so feel free to click on the button, wherever it is on your website, and give some money to Luke, because he's a very good English teacher.
Oh, thanks very much, Paul. Appreciate you saying that. It's true. Well, not necessarily the bit about me being a great English teacher, although obviously that is true. It's undisputably true.
You got awards proving so.
Yeah. But anyway, no, it's true that the money which is donated to me does go back into the podcast, and I use it to buy things like, you know, other things like new microphones, which allow me to provide this service at a slightly better quality. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it?
It's interesting enough. I don't know.
Okay, well...
You're the boss.
I had a comment on my website recently from someone saying, I would love to know... I don't know if this is how he spoke. Don't know where this person was from. But anyway, I'm going to give this person this kind of voice. Hello, Luke. I would love to know about the technical equipment that you utilise in order to record episodes of your podcast. Now, I'm using that voice not to sort of mock the person who wrote in with a comment, because it's a perfectly reasonable comment. I'm just using that voice just because I enjoy using that voice.
Yeah. Okay,
any opportunity... yes, I'd like a detailed description of of all of the microphones and recording equipment that you use to produce your wonderful podcast.
That voice sounds like it should know more about the microphones than you do.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a geeky underground gremlin voice.
I take a particular interest in all things technical. And I've been in prison for the last 27 years, and I'm very keen to know how things have progressed in the world of audiovisual recording techniques. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Basically, a couple of microphones, a laptop, mixing desk, and that's about it.
Yeah, you get your microphone, you plug it into what's known as a mixing desk. The mixing desk is then plugged into a recording device. Then what you have to do with that, you put batteries in it. You've got to use batteries. There's no point doing it without batteries. And then you press record and you end up with, you know, a recording. And that's basically how it works. Obviously, it's more complicated than that. I really don't know what I'm talking about. And in fact, I'm very tempted, Paul, to start again.
All right,
what do you think?
I think we probably can, because we've already wasted 5 minutes.
That's
and my zip's open. Look at that.
And your zip is open, and we've just wasted 5 minutes. Welcome to my podcast, Paul. This is what always happens here.
Yeah, especially when I'm on. We
ramble on about shit.
We end up doing about 10 takes of the intro.
Not just when you're on, Paul. I mean, it happens all the time. This MP3 recorder here that I use, my audio recorder, it's almost full. I've got a 16 gigabyte memory card in there, and it's almost full now. And it's not full of episodes. It's full of me going, welcome
shit.
To... Oh, fuck. Welcome to... Oh, bollocks. Now I've got to do it again.
All right, let's start again.
Yeah, well, let's start again then. This I might publish this as an outtake at some point, but no, we're going to start again.
All right, bye.
All right, then. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. How are you?
Can't do it.
No. Hello, everyone. Thanks for choosing to listen to this podcast. You chose wisely. This is Luke's English Podcast, as you know. No. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast, which is a podcast that you can listen to if you want to improve your English. That's the main aim. Now, I'm sitting here in the room where I'm... Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. If you're a new listener to the podcast, then welcome to the show. And I hope that you continue to listen and that it helps you to improve your English a lot. If you're a sort of long-term listener, then welcome back. And, Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. Now, sitting next to me in this episode, I have Paul Taylor again. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
How are you, Paul?
Every time I say hi, I don't know why I have to do that. I can't just say hi.
Hi, like that.
Yeah, whatever.
It's not the normal way that you say hi.
You don't. I mean, sometimes it is. Sometimes you say bye like that. You go bye.
Yeah, but anyway. Not hi. When I normally see you, Paul, what's the normal way that we greet each other?
All right, mate.
All right?
All right.
All right, mate?
All right, mate.
Yeah, so let's start again, shall we? Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. Sitting next to me is Paul Taylor, who you might know from previous episodes of this podcast. All right, mate?
Hello.
Hello. What's that? That's like the textbook version of how you introduce yourself. Hello, my name is Paul Taylor.
Hello.
I'm English. I am, I don't know how old you are, I am younger than Luke.
It's America. Good morning. It was a good morning until you opened your mouth.
Oh, all right. Okay.
I don't know. All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. This is Paul Taylor here. Luke is unable to record a proper intro to his own podcast, and this is about the 10th time that we're going for it. So welcome to the show. I am back from an Edinburgh Fringe Festival. It's this bollocks.
It's more difficult than you think, isn't it?
It is.
It's quite difficult, actually. All right, let's try again.
Hello and welcome to Luke's English Podcast, live from Paris. Welcome to the show. Those of you who are new to the show, welcome, welcome. For those of you who are regular listeners, then welcome back. It's great to have you on. My name's Paul Taylor, and I've decided to commandeer the introduction to Luke's English Podcast.
Wait a minute. What are you doing?
I don't know. I thought since you're having a bit of trouble doing the intro, and this is about the 10th time that we're doing it, I thought I would give it a go.
Yeah, but this is Luke's English Podcast, not Paul's English Podcast.
I know, but, you know, I figured
that... You can't just step in and just...
It's just one of the disciples, right? It doesn't matter. Were Luke and Paul disciples?
Disciples?
I don't know.
No, Paul... Matthew, Mark, Luke and... Okay, Luke was... fucking hell. This is going to be an episode of the podcast that's all outtakes. You realise that? We've just recorded something like 20 minutes of outtakes. Right, the next one we're going to do properly, all right? In fact, we might just carry on with this now.
All right, let's do it.
What do you think?
Yeah, let's carry on.
Let's just carry on?
Let's just do it. It's fine. Okay. It's good.
Okay, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. There, you see?
That's how you do it.
Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. Welcome to another episode. Now, you might be listening to this and thinking, what's going on? I don't know if you're making that noise, but God, what's going on? If you are thinking that, then don't worry, everything's fine.
And so are we. That's internally what we're thinking.
Yeah. Let me just explain. So you're listening to a podcast. You know what that is, don't you? You should do by now. Anyway, it's produced by me. My name's Luke, and I'm an English teacher. Yes, I am, honestly, despite the slightly disorganized way that I have begun this episode of the podcast. I'm an English teacher, and I do this podcast for people who are learning English. I imagine that you are one of those people. You might be a long-term listener to the podcast, in which case this kind of introduction at the beginning is no surprise to you, because you've heard this kind of nonsense before, I suppose, and you're thinking, Luke and Paul are just having fun at the beginning of the podcast, as usual. If you're new to the podcast, then... let me assure you that this is, in fact, an award-winning podcast for learners of English. That's right, 4 awards, the same one 4 times, which somehow...
But that's good. The 4 one, yeah? Yeah, I mean, it depends what it... I can't remember the name of the award, but
It was the Macmillan Dictionary Award, basically, for Best Blog 2011, 2012, 2013, and 2014, even though it's not a blog, it's a podcast.
This is true. And it's basically whoever's got the most friends wins.
It's the one... Well, it's... Yeah, I suppose so.
No, but it's good. It's a good award. And if you've won it four times, it means that every year it's still... You're keeping up the quality.
I think what it means really to me is that I've got some very, very nice and appreciative listeners who recognise that Luke's English Podcast is genuinely a wonderful way to improve your English. And so, because they're nice people, they all voted for me. And that's why I'm now able to blag about it.
Yeah, it's good.
Or brag about it.
Brag about it, yeah.
Blag and brag. Yeah, brag is like when you show off.
And blag is a... Is that a French...
Blag is, well...
To blag your way through something, yeah. Means to... Back to fixed expressions, ladies and gentlemen.
More vocabulary. So to brag is like, yeah, I've won four awards. I think you'll find that it's, you know, probably the best podcast in the universe. don't mean to brag about it, though, of course, you know. And that's to brag, yeah. Right? And then to blag is to sort of basically sort of lie or make up stories as a way of cheating. Like, for example, I've had, as a teacher, I've heard lots of my students blagging before. For example, like, why are you late, Paul? Why are you late for the English class again? You're always late.
My dog... see, what happened was my dog got caught. His leash got caught in the car and we had to stop the car and take him out. And that's why it just took an extra 10 minutes.
Just blagging again, aren't you? Such a blagger. It's just...
I've never heard that term. I've heard the term to blag your way through something, but I've never heard... A blagger.
Right.
Like, to blag your way through something, for me, is something like if you're trying to do something and you're not very good at it, you can blag your way through
right.
it by doing something.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes total sense to me.
Which means to kind of make up some stuff and it's difficult to describe, but yeah, blag.
Here we go. Blag. This is from Cambridge Dictionaries Online. Look, blag, verb. To persuade someone in a clever or slightly dishonest way to allow you to do something or to give you something. In this case, you're late for the class and you're just sort of trying to persuade me to let you come into the classroom even though you're late.
Fair enough.
But somehow they managed to blag their way in.
Yeah.
For example, you know, I went to see, I don't know, the Rolling Stones concert. I didn't have a ticket.
But you managed to blag your way in.
Just blagged my way in.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm an interviewer from Luke's English Podcast. It's won four awards. And I'm here to interview Keith Richards and Mick Jagger. And look, my name's on the list. There it is. There. Anyway, thanks very much. And whew, I was in.
That's,
I just blagged my way in.
Blagged your way in, yeah.
Yeah.
See, the French word blag means joke.
Right.
Speaking of jokes, the kind of theme of this podcast, I think, is related to comedy.
Oh, sorry.
And how comedy is similar to... to language learning. What
sorry,
have you
just,
done?
I just said that I got the computer to say the word blagger several times over the top of what you were saying as a sort of a digital insult.
Oh, okay. Will they be able to hear that? Because
yeah,
I didn't hear
they
it.
They can hear. You can't hear it. Put the headphones on.
Okay, I'm going to put the headphones on. I'm putting the Oh, God, I've smashed my glasses.
In fact...
hold on, I can't figure it out very well.
you should see what Paul
is
doing.
I've got one earphone in.
First of all, let's have the word blag in a British accent.
Blag.
Okay, that's good.
And then here's the American version.
Blag.
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 And blag. Blag. That's blag to persuade someone.
So they're going to hear this? Is this Mick?
They're hearing all of this. So, for example, somehow they managed to blag their way in, and there are often people heading my way, so it's easy to blag a lift.
Okay.
Which is like to persuade people to give you a lift in the car.
Right.
And then blagger is someone who blags.
Blagger.
Blagger.
Yeah, and the American one?
Blagger.
That's pretty funny.
Blagger.
Blagger.
So there it is, a word, but yeah, anyway. Right. So, sorry, I interrupted you, Paul.
I was trying to do a good transition there from the shit that we were talking about into a real podcast.
No, that's a good point. So, yes, Paul, you've been away. You were in Edinburgh for a month.
Correct,
right?
Yeah. I was in Edinburgh, which is in Scotland, for a month. And I was there for a festival, a comedy festival called The Fringe.
Yeah.
It's a comedy festival that runs the entire month of August, pretty much, where there's thousands of people that go there as performers to create their own shows and perform basically for a whole month, where the city gets taken over and essentially every bar, every possible space is taken up by this Fringe festival where... They put some chairs in, microphones and speakers, and it becomes a comedy venue for the whole month. And then there's free shows and there's paid shows as well. So yeah, it was. That's where I've been for the last month, is trying to be funny in Scotland.
Okay, so just for listeners who don't know, Paul is a friend of mine, and he's also a stand-up comedian. And earlier this year, he made the bold decision to quit his job, to give up his job, in order to pursue stand-up comedy as his career. And it's a bold move because, you know, his job was pretty good. He used to work at Apple.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be in training at
Correct,
Apple,
yeah.
Right?
I used to fly around the world and deliver training to people on Apple products. It was good. I enjoyed it. But I decided to give that up.
Why did you give up the job then?
I think because I could see my life secure in front of me for a long time. It's a great company. It's not going to die anytime soon. And so I could see myself at 60 years old retiring, or whatever the retirement age is, and just having done that my whole life, because it was my first proper job. I'm 28 now, or almost 29, and I started at Apple when I was 20. So basically I'd grown up with them, and I could have stayed there for another 30 years. Mm. And I think I would have regretted not having tried doing comedy full time. So I thought, at least I'll give it a go full time for a few years, and if nothing really comes of it, I'm pretty sure I could either get a job back at Apple or some other company that would have me back, because with 8 years of Apple on a CV, I think it's I think I'll be all right. I'm not sure, but I'm excited about not knowing if I'm going to be all right or not.
So you decided to basically take the risk and take the leap and leave the job that could have kept you secure for the rest of your life, although that could have been a bit boring.
Yeah.
You chose to pursue the comedy as a risk and just to see what would happen.
Yeah, I gave up the dream job to follow the actual dream. Some people call me brave.
Some people call you stupid.
Yep.
Mainly me. Not really. It was just a...
Well, it's people have said that I'm brave, but I might be stupid.
Right. So I need to do that sound whenever I say something that's intended to be funny. Okay?
I can't hear. What is that? The drum?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to set you up with headphones. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by my friend Paul Taylor. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
How are you, mate?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm doing. It's good to be back. Good to be back in Paris.
Now, Paul has been away in Edinburgh for about a month. He's only just come back. He was away at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.